There's a lot of information out there about COVID-19, and some of it is false. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Today on Sundial, we're going to try and help you get the latest accurate information about this coronavirus. We have two infectious disease experts to join us to help us find answers.
We make safe vaccines for other kinds of viruses that use different kinds of tricks, but we have to have a safe vaccine.
If they're having trouble breathing, then we help them breathe. But there is no drug that we can give that specifically targets the virus.
Also, we're going to look at our mental health. There are a lot of people out of work, and sheltering in place means very little human interaction. We want your questions. Call in 800-743-9576 or find us on Twitter or Facebook and share your question or your story. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. The coronavirus continues to spread throughout the United States with devastating consequences. President Trump declared a major disaster area exists in Florida and opened up federal resources to assist local governments. Cities have begun taking their own action. The city of Miami has issued a shelter-in-place order, and Miami-Dade County is enacting a curfew. Will these actions be enough to slow the curve of new coronavirus patients? What do we still need to learn about the virus? We're joined now by Dr. Eileen Marty, an infectious disease expert. She was also critical in the U.S. response to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa and the response to Zika in South Florida. She's with the Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine at FIU. We're also joined by Dr. Bindu Mayi, a professor of microbiology in the College of Osteopathic Medicine at Nova Southeastern University. Dr. Mayi, great to have you back as well.
Thank you for having me.
And we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the coronavirus, the spread of it, the symptoms, maybe questions about the use of masks and gloves, anything? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. Again, that's 800-743-9576. You can also email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. So we're watching as this virus has caused widespread devastation in European countries. Here in the United States, New York City has become the epicenter of the crisis. Dr. Marty, I hear from health experts saying that we're a couple of weeks behind what you see in some of these countries like Spain and Italy. Does that mean we're about to become Italy soon? Could the U.S. become the next epicenter of the virus?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, that is a reality. We're behind the virus. We're not ahead of it as we wish we were. Our hospitals, in fact, I was just on the line with hospital administrators that are struggling to figure out how they're going to increase the intensive care unit spaces that we need in order to save patients' lives. And the reason that we are likely to become another epicenter has to do not only with what we just spoke about, but also because it's not our nature to shelter in place, and we don't have a uniform policy throughout any state or throughout the United States either as to exactly how to approach this problem. And that's a challenge.
You said you talked to hospitals. I'd like to know if you can share with us. I mean, what are they asking? What are they saying about what they think is coming next, and are they ready?
They're not ready. They're trying to get ready. There's still a supply chain issue with all kinds of equipment that are necessary to save lives and to protect our healthcare workers. There's still a supply chain issue with medications as well, and even with reagents for doing some of the testing. So we're struggling, and there's a space issue. So some hospitals are even considering using garage space to turn them into ICUs, but that's really unnecessary and not really what we should do. We have a better alternative.
So the other thing, too, that you had mentioned is the fact that, you know, we're a little bit behind and we've talked about this before, as a nation, we're a little bit behind in trying to get ahead of this virus. But you said it yourself, this idea of sheltering in place, maybe not something that we're used to. Is it the messaging? Is it just in general, we're defiant to the idea of having to isolate ourselves? What could we have done?
we need to, all of us, recognize our role and the importance of all of us cooperating. And people of all ages have to recognize that they too have to contribute to getting this, getting the flatten the curve, as we say. And right now, there are some stations and some individuals who are not taking, who are in positions of leadership, who are not taking this seriously enough, and calling for us to get out of kind of hunkering down way too soon. And that's a huge, huge problem, especially when we underestimate the threat of this virus. It's just, it's a huge threat economically, physically, socially, emotionally, and in every possible way. We will have staggering numbers of deaths if we don't, all of us, become extremely serious about this within the next few days. And every minute, every hour, every day that we delay means weeks more of trouble and many more people in ICUs, yeah, and an increased risk of death.
Whatever questions you have about COVID-19, maybe the information that's out there, you're wondering what information to trust, what information not to trust. Maybe you're hearing about things people are saying on cures or prevention. Again, let's clarify everything. Let's find the accurate information today. You can also find us on social media, WLRN Sundial. Dr. Mai, we spoke back in January, the two of us, and much less was known about the virus then, but how much have we learned in just a couple of months? What do we know now?
Back then, we used to think that it's just the elderly and individuals with comorbidities who may be at higher risk. But now, based on the most recent analysis that the CDC has done on hospitalized adults here in the United States, we also know that it's individuals 20 to 64 that also make up a major chunk of hospitalizations and ICU admits. So that really changes the way we have to approach this illness. It's not just the elderly and the vulnerable that have to shelter in place. It's also the seemingly healthy that also seem to get the infection and also seem to succumb to it and even be so severe as to be admitted to the ICU.
Remember, you can find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Any question you have, whatever question that may be about the coronavirus, again, want to find accurate information now, today. And again, I hear a lot of things. There are a lot of things online. Let's try to clear the air here of what's real and what's not. Dr. Marty, do we know why individuals often aren't presenting symptoms until days or weeks after they've been infected?
Well, first of all, it's really not an uncommon phenomenon. There's a number of diseases where people shed virus before they're symptomatic. In fact, even influenza virus, people shed virus a day before they have any symptoms whatsoever if they're adults. And kids can even shed influenza 3 or 4 days before they're showing any symptoms. So it's really not an uncommon thing, and it's definitely happening here. But this is a much more serious disease, and therefore, and we don't have any kind of proven antiviral or proven vaccine, so it makes it a much worse scenario. There's something I'd like to address that you were speaking about earlier, and that is the number of younger people who are falling ill. And I want to make you pay attention to the fact that the percentages haven't really changed that much. It's just that the numbers are so much higher that it's become more obvious that it's a significant risk to younger individuals. I mean, we always knew, ever since January when the studies came out from China and February, that 2.5 to 3% of children would have severe or grave disease. As more and more people get it, that percentage represents a lot more children. And so we've not right. only seen severe disease in children, but also death.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that we talked about before. Is this back, you know, and again, it was just a couple of months ago, but it seemed like, wait a minute, children aren't being hit by this as much. But as you said, now we're starting to see exactly what this virus can do. Let's go to the phones. I want to go to Gabriel in West Palm Beach. Gabriel, thanks for waiting.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a resident of West Palm Beach, as you said, and I'm a caregiver for my mom, who is in the at-risk category with underlying conditions. From what I can tell, Palm Beach County ranks like almost last as far as testing is concerned. And I wanted to know if at what point will testing be broadened to actually get on the front foot of this, of treating this, of, you know, containing it. Well, maybe not containing it, but limiting the damage.
More about the issue of testing. Just out of curiosity, Gabriel, you know, have you reached out to your doctor or any health facility about the question of testing, especially for the family that you're taking care of?
Well, yeah, I had a little scare, I guess you could say. And so I reached out to the hotline and, you know, I spoke with someone and they basically said, well, if you're not showing the specific symptoms like tightness of the chest, cough, things like that, then you can't get tested.
Right.
They'll turn away. And what it is that I guess the fear is that since there's a like an asymptomatic kind of possibility of spreading it, you know, it seems like you have to get to a worst case scenario.
I see.
Before they say, okay, get tested.
Let's find out. Gabriel, thank you so much for the call. And you know, you and your family, please stay safe. Dr. Marty, this idea of testing, I mean, I have to find the numbers to see what's happening with testing in Palm Beach County. I don't have that in front of me. But statewide, just overall, you know, what are we doing on testing? Are there enough tests out there?
There are absolutely not enough tests out there. Still, we're still having an issue with having enough tests and test reagents, but more and more, more places are coming online, more hospitals are using their own methods of testing to do the appropriate correct test as specified by the FDA. But your Gabriel is absolutely right. So far, most of the ways that we're allowing testing, not by my choice, is people who have a certain level of symptoms, and that absolutely is hiding a lot of the outbreaks. Some areas, for example, Hollywood, Florida, has one hospital that's doing a tremendous bang up job of testing individuals who have all levels of illness, but even they are not testing a different way of testing, which is called surveillance testing, where you're simply going out and polling to see what the background level of infection is, which is also those kinds of things will absolutely be crucial to getting this under control. We know this if you look at what happened in China. When they instigated only the shelter in place, they couldn't get that reproductive number low enough. They couldn't get the reproduction number below one.
Right.
All that sheltering in place that they did, the reproductive number was still 1.25. It was only when they did rigorous testing of every single case and every contact of every single case and treating every case and isolating every case did they finally get that reproductive number under one and help end their outbreak. And that's what South Korea is doing as well.
Right. I want to go back to the phones. This is an interesting question. I want to go to Robin in Coral Gables. Robin, you got a question about immunity.
Yes. Do you build up an immunity to this virus after you've had it?
Very good question. Now, Dr. Mai, I'll throw that one at you. You know, what happens if you get it? Or can you get it a second time? Or can some people build an immunity to this?
Yes. So based on what we know with SARS and the MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome virus, I would imagine, yes, we should be building an immunity against this virus, or we would have seen far more cases coming out of China yet again. But as far
go ahead. I'm having some technical issues. We're going to try to fix this. But Dr. Marty, go ahead.
So reinfection is always a possibility with any viral infection, especially if it's the first time your body encounters a virus and you have what we call a subclinical infection and you don't mount much of a response to it, which puts those younger people at an increased risk later on. Second, reinfection is also possible for lots of viral infections within that time period when your body first encounters a virus and your body develops antibodies that are actually neutralizing. And that interval of time, we call that window of reinfection, and that varies like for different people depending on the bolus of virus that they originally were exposed to, their underlying conditions, their general state of health, their how much they weigh, their body mass index, their age, their exercise and nutritional habits. Another thing people should know is that this SARS-CoV-2, the virus of COVID-19, will lower your immunity to other infections. So that's something we have to pay attention to in hospitals. And last but not least, we know that SARS-CoV-2 is one of those viruses that does something called antibody-mediated enhancement. And that means that we're still unsure what the net effect is going to be if you get re-exposed to a related but similar enough virus. It could lead to an actually harsher and more deadly disease.
Right.
So it's not clear anybody's off the hook after they've been recovered from COVID-19.
Yeah. Robin, I hope that helps. It definitely helps me understand it a little bit better. Thank you for the call.
Yes. Thank you.
Again, talking with Dr. Eileen Marty from FIU. We also have Dr. Bindu Mayi. We're going to take a break here real quickly. And again, we're asking you, what do you want to know about COVID-19, about this coronavirus? And the information that you're getting, what's accurate, what's not? We are still hearing from you, by the way, by email. We heard from A. Durden. Durden saying, I see other areas asking for homemade masks, face masks. Are any local facilities accepting them? Is there a local contact? And are they effective? Let's talk about masks when we get back. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, let's get back to our conversation with our two infectious disease experts about COVID-19. Again, Dr. Eileen Marty of FIU and Dr. Bindu Mayi of Nova Southeastern University. And again, taking your calls. If you can't get through, you can always find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. That's Twitter and Facebook. Post your question there, and we'll try to get to them as quickly as we can. Dr. Marty, could Florida be taking even more drastic measures to enforce this idea of sheltering in place, social distancing, especially what we're seeing in South Florida? The numbers are starting to get really big. Do we have to take more drastic measures right now? Because we're already telling people in South Florida, stay at home unless you have to go outside.
Well, it's a county by county situation in South Florida. And I have to say, I'm particularly proud of Miami-Dade County. They've been very proactive in many ways. In all aspects, including the restrictions that we have now, but it would be ideal if all of Florida took equally seriously, just as other states need to do. This thing continues to spread. We're still seeing a reproductive number over 2 right now in the United States, and if we don't do the measures that we know work, which are the tools we have available now, which means, number one, the social distancing, the isolation, the stay home, the cleaning, the hygiene.
You know what? You talk about cleaning
surfaces.
You talk about that, staying clean, the cleaning and all that. But we had that question earlier about the masks. Do masks work, and who should be using them?
Right. So people are a little bit confused about masks. First of all, there's two different kinds of masks anyway. There's actually surgical masks, which are not respirators, and then there are masks that are called face masks, which are not surgical masks. They fall under a different federal category, and those include your N95 masks. And by the way, just means not resistant to oil. So there are different kinds of face masks, and then the percentage, the 95, means how many viral particles are being obstructed, or how many other particles, depending on what that mask is, that face mask is set for, are being obstructed. You can have an N50 mask, N95, or an N100 if more than 99.9% of particles are being obstructed.
But who should be using them?
And who should be using them? Well, anyone who is shedding virus should be using that to keep the environment around him or her clean for others, and that's an important thing. And the other one, of course, is anyone with a severe underlying condition that could make them at high risk from this could possibly benefit a little bit if they use a surgical mask. Now, again, that's why I wanted to distinguish them, a surgical mask correctly, which means that they don't touch it and then get auto-contaminated, and they don't stick their hands under it. So they have to know how to use it. And I will mention something very beautiful that's happening here in South Florida. including at FIU, but schools are doing it too. We're using 3D printers to create face shields and masks for hospitals and for our own people.
That goes to what we heard again from our email listener, Mr. Durden, who said, "What about these homemade face masks?" That's like a homemade face mask then.
Well, we're making them just as good as they do by the manufacturers because we're following the same parameters on our 3D printers as any manufacturer would, and of course that's a very inexpensive way of having the supply we need. I will tell you that the Center for Disease Control a few days ago put in some ways in which we can extend the use of face masks because we have this terrible shortage of this very needed item. And among the things that they wanted us to consider, especially if we're not healthcare workers but out there in the field and have some reason to be using some kind of a mask, is, believe it or not, a bandana. And that reminded me of my days in the military, because we were told that that cotton T-shirts have 100 micron holes, which is way too big. That would definitely let a virus in. But if you folded it over three times and used it as a bandana, while not a very perfect protection, would provide a little bit of protection.
So
I thought it was quite interesting that the CDC was advising that old military trick.
And it's interesting because you see people posting photos, on Facebook or Instagram everywhere of just some of these, makeshift masks that people are making. And you always wonder, if that would work or not. Let's go to the phones. I want to go to Matthew, who's been waiting in Miami. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's up? What's your question?
I was wondering, is this COVID-19, is it more contagious than the common flu?
Dr. Marty, is this more contagious than the common flu?
Yes, it's more contagious than the common flu. Not by a lot, but yes, it's more contagious. And again, it has a longer period of time between when you're shedding virus and when you're symptomatic. So there's that longer asymptomatic period that also puts people at risk.
All right, Matthew, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to, because I want to come back to this idea of masks, let's go to Marlene in Miami, has a question about reusing her masks, right?
Yes, what I've been doing is I have asthma pretty severe at this time of year, and I have some N95 masks. I've tried different methods of cleaning them, but what seems to work the best is to take a paper towel, put your mask on it with the outside down, and I take a couple of spritz of isopropyl alcohol. And to flush it out, I let it air dry. And I do believe that it's working at least to some extent, because if you reuse a mask, after a while, it tends to pick up kind of a funky odor. And it smells clean and fresh. I don't know, certainly it's flushing the pollen out, I believe. And the mask for me is properly fitted. So I don't know if it's scientifically sound, but it seems to be working at least from an odor new test.
Okay.
So maybe other people can try that too.
Well, Dr. Marty, what about that? Would you recommend what she's doing?
I 100% congratulate her. That's exactly the kinds of recommendations that we're giving. Isopropyl alcohol is a safe product, especially when she lets it sit out for a while like that. That's a good way to reuse a mask that hasn't been used by a physician in front of a highly contagious COVID patient who, because we're rescuing them, is aerosolizing it, at which point I would not reuse that mask.
All right.
But for her purposes and what she's doing, it's absolutely brilliant. And I do want to mention something important here. I've seen people who have been using products like Lysol to clean their masks, and that's dangerous because what your caller just talked about, that's not dangerous. That's a great way to decrease any risk of having COVID. But other products can be dangerous and can lead to unnecessary coughing and toxicity. So.
Yeah. Marlene, thanks so much for the call and for bringing up a very good tip. I wanted to get, Dr. Marty, I wanted to ask you, we did get another question from a caller asking about whether we're seeing any tests being used in Europe or anywhere in the world that are unapproved here but may eventually be successful. What's happening globally in the fight to find the antiviral and also the vaccine?
Okay, well, that's a whole bunch of questions in one. In terms of the testing, a little group in Berlin, the Charité Hospital, came up with the first effective RT-PCR, and that, of course, is being used in many countries. It was picked up by the WHO as an excellent test. Then Hong Kong and China and Japan and Thailand all came up with excellent tests. And then we did about 11 days later, but ours wasn't very good, so we had to go back to the drawing board, which is part of the reason that we're having problems here in the U.S. is that our RT-PCR was slow to get to us and slow to be effective.
Okay. So, again, just as a reminder to people that, you know, the vaccine could be a long ways away, but we keep hearing from experts, you know, what, how long this will last and what we can expect. And obviously politicians will say one thing, medical experts will tell us another thing, and it's an uncertainty, and it's uncomfortable, and it's scary. Okay, so tell us, what can we expect?
Well, there's a few good things coming down the pike. As you are probably well aware, there's a lot of new and old drugs that are being tested to see if they have value. And one of the drugs that you've probably heard a lot about is chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine, two very closely related drugs. Even the president has spoken about it. It's a drug that myself, as a specialist for 40 years, have used and given to patients back when it was the ideal drug against malaria. It's not anymore, but it actually is a drug, both of them, both chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine, have functions not just against malaria and not just for autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, but they're known to have effects on a number of different viruses. In fact, there's known, back in 2004, 2005, 2006, we had done tests with these hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine for SARS virus. And so that's one of the reasons that there was so much enthusiasm for trying this drug, which overall is a safe drug, as long as it's used in the right concentrations and in the right formula for humans.
Okay.
There was a report recently of that being a problem. But we know how it works. In fact, it holds a tremendous amount of promise.
All right. Well, you know what? We're going to bring you back on at some point so we can keep, because look, there's so much happening and, you know, things keep changing. And we just want to keep people updated on the latest information. Again, we've been talking with Dr. Eileen Marty, an infectious disease expert at FIU. Earlier, we had Dr. Bindu Mayi from Nova Southeastern University. Dr. Marty, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Anytime. Take care.
And again, you can stay up to date with the latest coronavirus updates. Go to WLRN.org/coronavirus. Still to come, we're going to take a step back and we're going to talk about mental health and how we're holding up in this time of sheltering in place. All of that coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, beyond the physical toll this virus has on our bodies and the negative impact that it's taken on our livelihoods, it's starting to affect a part of our lives that isn't discussed enough, our mental health. The anxiety of remaining sheltered in place, the questions about a loved one who's become sickened by the virus, the questions your kids may have about what the heck is going on. Joining us are two psychologists to give us some tools to stay mentally healthy and assist others struggling in these difficult times. We do have one on the line I want to get to, Dr. Scott Poland, a professor at the College of Psychology at Nova Southeastern University. And by the way, he's also the co-director of the Suicide, Violence, and Prevention Office. We'll try to get the other doctor to join us here momentarily. But we want to ask you how you're holding up. What questions do you have about staying mentally healthy? How are you talking to your kids about this? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial and share with us what you're doing right now, you know, to keep your sanity and how you're helping your friends, your family. Maybe you're struggling with something right now. Maybe we can help you find some answers today. Again, Dr. Poland, I want to thank you so much for the time. Very important conversation. Let me start with this. During these times of uncertainty, you know, there's a lot of extra pressure that's added to the pain that some people are already dealing with. Some people are already dealing with depression and other issues. And as I said, you work in the Office of Suicide and Violence Prevention. What worries you about what people are going through right now and how sheltering in place is playing a role in their lives.
Well, Lewis, you're correct. This is a time of great uncertainty for all of us. And I'd like to stress the word calm. And I'd like to use a couple of those letters to really focus on key things, thinking about what can we control. And we can work on controlling our own reactions, setting up things in our home that are healthy for everyone. And especially now with all the children at home, parents need to be available for their children. They also need to listen and make sure that they are there to validate the feelings and thoughts and concerns that their children have. I'd also suggest that L should stand for limiting the amount of news coverage. I mean, to be honest, I find myself when I watch the news for a very long period of time, I'm especially anxious. So we don't want it to consume our entire lives.
Yeah.
And then the M has to be for modeling, because children in particular are going to look to the adults in their lives to see how upset to be about this.
Dr. Poland, how are you dealing with this yourself? I mean, what are you doing in your life to build that structure at home, sheltering in place? I don't know, maybe you have to go to the office, but I mean, you know, how are you doing it personally?
Well, I think that's very important to think of it as the two B's: keep my brain and my body busy, which means working on activities, very, very important. Also making sure that we figure out a way to get some exercise. And this will be especially important for children. And the reality is that I hope all the parents that have children now at home that can't go to school, it's like there needs to be a schedule. It needs to be on the refrigerator. This is when we get up. We get dressed. Here are the things we're going to do today with regards to our school activities.
Yeah.
Then we're going to build in leisure. We're going to build in fun things.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like you have to build structure, because that's what we're used to, is structure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We need structure in our homes, and we really need all the parents to take a number of deep breaths and say, I can handle this. I've been through difficult times before. There will be a future. I will enjoy the extra time I now have with my children. I'll figure out a way to balance the work I'm supposed to be doing at home with coping with my children being here and helping them. See, I think what children are always going to remember were my parents available to me at this time.
Yeah.
That they really focus on me.
Let's do this. Let's do this, because I do have the other doctor joining us now. Joining us now is Dr. Jill Ehrenreich-May. She's a professor of psychology at the University of Miami, specializing in treatment and emotional disorders in youth. Dr. Ehrenreich-May, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You know, in these times, because we talk about kids, they're not in school. They're at home, forcing some parents to have to stay at home to take care of them. That structure that we were just hearing from Dr. Poland, not there. What are you doing? Because you're a parent. How are you doing this?
Yeah, I was reflecting this morning that I don't think I've had this much time home alone with my children consistently since I was on family leave, you know, in the past. And it really does throw you out of sync in the beginning, because you have, in some cases, work obligations and parenting obligations and school obligations and other things that you're trying to factor into a really unusual situation where everybody is feeling a lot of anxiety and things feel very unreal to a certain extent. So I want to echo a lot of the things that Dr. Poland said already. I think that what I've been trying to do is, first of all, just take a breath and notice that doing things like keeping a good schedule are really important. Talking to my children and validating their emotions are really important. But also things like having fun are really important, and making sure that we are, you know, not setting unrealistic expectations for ourselves as parents as we try to navigate all of these challenges. None of us are, you know, very few of us anyway are maybe teachers already, and so having the expectation that we're going to be able to teach the same way that our teachers do to our children, you know, might not be particularly realistic.
What are you telling your kids about what the coronavirus is? I mean, I can imagine different ages will understand different things, but if you have very young kids, do you even talk to them about the virus? And they're probably going to overhear stuff on the news.
Yeah, I think that it is important to talk to them, but as you mentioned, talk to them at their level. You know, share facts and definitely share facts, you know, not necessarily things you're unsure about. And try to use kids speak. You know, we're all very familiar with the way that we would kind of normally explain something to our child in an age-appropriate way. You know, so that may be, you know, this is why we don't put our fingers in our nose right now, and you know, as opposed to giving a lot of detail about all of the really good scientific reasons why we wouldn't do those kinds of things. So I think it is important to speak with them. I think it's important to speak with them simply, and also to validate their feelings. If they're feeling scared or they're feeling uncertain, those would be really normal, natural responses to this. And I think it's important to sort of acknowledge that. And you can even say, you know, I might be feeling this way a little bit myself, too. Let's think about some things we could do to cope.
And let's go to Sue in Lake Worth, talking about children and access to information. Sue, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm calling because I have two preschoolers and I'm working from home. And so I am seeing the kids spend more time in front of the computer or the TV. And I'm wondering if the school boards that are sending home computers and sending the kids to school on the internet are informing parents about the basic practices of internet safety. I'm having a little bit of concern
about that restriction to the internet. Dr. Iron Rashmay, I mean, you have a lot more time. Some parents do. They're going to be at home, so you can watch the kids a little bit more. But what do you say to Sue about, because this is, everything's changed. Usually the kids are at home at a certain time. You have rules. Again, you have a certain structure. You got to rebuild the whole structure.
Yeah, I completely understand the concern. You know, if I'm having a work meeting on Zoom and my child is on, you know, their device, you know, playing a game, I may not be monitoring them in the same way that I would perhaps when I could be more actively engaged in that process. But I think, you know, if we think about the overarching kind of structure that we might want to have at home during these times, it's important to reiterate to your children that there are rules that exist probably under more normal circumstances, or maybe you haven't articulated them to your children lately because you haven't needed to, but things around internet safety, for example, things around other behavioral issues, expectations for for what they're going to do, and maybe also how they get rewarded for following those rules, that should be part of your discourse with your child as well.
Sue, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. I wanted to turn things over. Dr. Poland, I wanted to come to you about this. When we deal with a natural disaster like a hurricane, or if we deal with an economic collapse like we did in 2008, one of the things we tend to see is child abuse and suicide rates go up. This is uncharted territory. This is a pandemic. We haven't seen anything like this in not in generations. Do you expect the same thing to happen?
Well, we do know, Lewis, that after we've had natural disasters and hurricanes in Florida, that the data did go up in terms of child abuse. Now, I think it's just really important that the adults turn to their friends, their partners, and they get the help they need. And I realize a lot of people are sheltering in place, and yes, they're isolated in some way, but Zoom is so simple. I mean, we can have extended family meetings on Zoom. And just yesterday, I did FaceTiming with our daughter in Houston. And really just seeing her face and talking with her was just really helpful in reducing anxiety. So I don't know that we've ever had a time in history when shelter in place has allowed us so much opportunity through the internet to connect with the people that we are truly close to.
But what about this, Dr. Poland? I mean, that is helpful, being able to talk to people and even seeing them because of the technology. We could see them. But, You know, some people, they really need that human interaction. They've got to be next to somebody. They got to be able to see them up close in person. What do you say to those folks about how to handle this?
We have to do the best we can. But one thing that I ask everyone, and unfortunately I've responded to a lot of major disasters, like the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, New York, Parkland, MSD tragedy. Everybody needs to be asked, who or what has helped you when you've had to deal with something really sad and tragic before? And all we're trying to do is remind everyone you have coping mechanisms, problem-solving skills. Make sure you use those at this very difficult and uncertain time.
I'm talking with Dr. Scott Poland, professor at the College of Psychology at Nova Southeastern University, and Dr. Jill Ehrenreich May, professor of psychology at the University of Miami in treatment in emotional disorders in youth. And we're taking your questions. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Let us know, what are you doing right now in this time to protect your mental health and to protect your sanity? We heard from Francisco Enrique on Twitter. He says he is doing endless meditation. I'm doing a little bit more, and it is helpful, so that is good to hear. Share with us what you're doing right now, or maybe you got a question for either of our two panelists. Dr. Ehrenreich May, the other thing, I'm going to get back to parents. What are you hearing mostly from parents about, you know, now having to shift their lives to, the kids aren't just home from school. They still have to be learning. So there's this extra pressure of being a parent, working, and now you got to be a teacher.
Yeah, I concur completely. I think that there's a pretty varied amount of experiences in what I've seen thus far. You know, I think some people have been able to really successfully translate this situation into a good routine for their household. And other people really feel very overwhelmed by it, very understandably. And, you know, maybe need to, you know, be practicing some, you know, present moment awareness and some mindfulness and sort of looking at, you know, their expectations for themselves. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, understanding that you were not trained as a teacher, perhaps. And so, you know, that you're doing the best that you can. And then remembering as parents, we're all just doing the best that we can under most circumstances. And that, you know, may have to be enough, you know. And I think that there's at least in my experience thus far here in Miami-Dade County, a lot of understanding from our school teachers and from the schools about that, you know, the idea that this is a big shift and that we want to keep our expectations reasonable for
right.
ourselves and our children.
I want to go back to the phones. I want to go to Martin in Pembroke Pines. Martin, thanks so much for waiting. How are you doing?
You're welcome. I'm doing just fine. You know, I'm listening to people talk about teaching their children. This is a great opportunity for parents to teach children how to live and the wisdom and spirituality of life. I talk to my son in New York every day. I spend about an hour with him. And he has COPD, so he's upset about this thing. I told him never to ask at this point. Don't ask what if. Ask yourself what is. Stay in the moment. If you have everything you need and you're not suffering from any problems right now, as long as you stay in the immediate moment, you'll be all right. Some will lay some of your fears. Acceptance is another thing. We can't change what's going on. We have to accept the things we can't change and change the things we can, which is ourselves.
Yeah. Martin, and I apologize only because of time, but thank you. So beautiful concept. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate you sharing that with us. I want to take one more call in here before I run out of time. I want to go to Vicki in Weston. Vicki, thanks for waiting.
Hello.
Go ahead, Vicki.
So to reiterate what everybody has said, like every single person here on your show has said, there is a lot that you can learn from the internet to help you with your mental health and with your kids' mental health. And the key thing for parents, really, is to sit down and figure out a plan, whether it's with your older kids who can help you out, because the reality is that not everybody can stay at home. This is perfect to know that you can be there and you can figure out a plan. But if you can't even stay at home because you're working, then you need to figure out somehow for somebody to help you figure out that plan
yeah.
and create that structure so that after that one day that you create that plan, it kind of rolls on its own like a system at home. And there are many things online now, tutoring. I'm a soccer coach. I'm doing soccer trainings online. There, WLRN has homeschooling online. I believe you have a program.
Right.
Many, many clubs, athletic clubs, are doing online training.
Yeah.
So if you if you create and block that time for each hour, it'll roll.
It'll work.
And it'll help you much more.
Vicki, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I got to finish up there. You know, again, we've heard from Dr. Jill Ehrenreich-May, professor of psychology at the University of Miami, specializing in emotional disorders in youth, and also Dr. Scott Poland, professor at the College of Psychology at Nova Southeastern University. As I mentioned, he's also the co-director of the Suicide Violence and Prevention Office. Thank you both of you so much for sharing with us today. Lots of important information.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
All right. And again, you know, you can always find us on Facebook or Twitter and share with us what you're doing to stay sane and stay safe in these times. We all have to do that. Well, that's our program for this Thursday, March 26. Coming up next week on Sundial, we're going to continue taking your calls and answering your questions about this coronavirus. And we plan on hearing from restaurant workers and labor attorneys about your rights during this pandemic. Plus, we should know more of the details of the $2 trillion spending package expected to pass the House and awaiting the president's signature. What is that money going to mean for people here in South Florida? As always, you can keep the conversation going. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And we want to note, by the way, just to change the topic here, we got a book club going. I'd imagine some of you have more time. You're reading more, right? I know I am. Well, you know what? We've been reading Ordinary Girls, a memoir by Jaquita Diaz. That was our March book. For April, we're not going to have a new book. But what we're going to do is we're going to go back and play some snippets of some of our past conversations. And we want to know, do you have a reading list during this pandemic? What is that reading list? Find us on Facebook. Look up Sundial Book Club. I'm Luis Hernandez. Stay safe. Stay sane. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Have a great weekend. We're back live on Monday.